Is Parshas Kisavei, and the parsha, of course, starts out with the mitzvah of Bikurim, when a farmer comes into Eretz Yisrael and he plants his crops, and the first fruits of the Shivas Haminim that he sees starting to blossom, to grow, he ties a cord around it and he earmarks that to be Bikurim, and when they grow a little more, he takes them to Yerushalayim, and he presents them to a Kayin. And the Psukim describe exactly what he says. There's a parsha of Mikra Bikurim. He has to make a declaration and about the history of Klal Yisrael, Aram Yevedavi, that Lavan tried to destroy us, and then we went to Mitzrayim, and the Egyptians were very bad to us, and they embittered our lives. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo and behold, has taken us this wonderful land. And this is the Yisayit of Akaras HaTayv. We have to always have gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all of the gifts that he gives us in our lives. Interestingly, the Pasuk says that who is the one that's supposed to bring these fruits? It says that you should v'samachta b'chol ha'tayv asher nasan lecha Hashem Elokecha u'beisecha. Ata v'alevi, you and the Levi. The Levi also has a mitzvah to bring bikurim. V'ager asher b'kirbecha, and the ger who is in your midst. The question is that the Levi doesn't own land in Eretz Yisrael. How is the Levi bringing Bikurim if we know that the Leviim were not given land in Eretz Yisrael? They were not given a chalukah of real estate in Eretz Yisrael like the rest of Klal Yisrael. So what does that mean when the Pasuk says, Atav HaLevi? And Rashi is aimed on this. And Rashi says, Af HaLevi Chai B'Bikurim. No, the Levi is indeed obligated to bring Bikurim. Im Natu B'Saych Arehem. If they plant within their cities. We know that there were Arei HaLevim. The Levim did have a place to dwell. They were earmarked, they were given designated cities throughout Eretz Yisrael in which they live. And let's say they go and they plant a garden in their own cities, and now they have Bikurim, they too would have a chiyuv to go and bring those first fruits to Yerushalayim and do the mitzvah of Bikurim. Pashtus, that would include not only the Havas Bikurim, but the Levim would also have to say the Parsha Bikurim. The Mikra Bikurim would also be part of their mitzvah, presumably. And that's exactly what the Rambam writes in Perek Dalet of Hilchas Bikurim Halacha Gimel, that the Levi, in fact, when he does bring Bikurim, also not only has to bring the Bikurim, but he also has to be Mevi Vekaire. He brings them and he reads the Parsha of Aram Yevid Avi, the parsha of Mikra Bikurim. What we see from here, and this is pointed out in the Sefer Lekach Das, one of my favorite svarim by Reb Isaac Osband, who was the Rashiva of Tells in Cleveland, who was Nifter several years ago. He points out that it's fascinating that a Levi has the ability to be Kaire this parsha. Why? Because what are we saying in the parsha? What we're saying in the parsha is, one of the things that you're speaking out is, Vayareyu Aysanu HaMitzrim. The Mitzrim were very, very bad to us. They were evil to us. Others teach it a little differently, that they made us evil is more, perhaps the more correct diktuk, that they demonized us, which is very often how our enemies choose to destroy us by polluting the mindset of the population in which we live to believe that we're subhuman and that we're trying to rebel against them and that we're taking their jobs, we're ruining their economy. This has played out time and time again through history, and this is how Rav Gifter and Rav David Feinstein and others interpret the words Vayareu Aysanu HaMitzrim, that the Mitzrim, they weren't not just bad to us, but they, Vayareu Aysanu, they made us look very bad. They made us look evil in the people's eyes. Be that as it may, but the pasuk says, and this is what everyone is expected to say as they bring the Bikurim, that the Egyptians were bad, vayanunu, and they oppressed us, they afflicted us, vayitnu aleinu avayda kasha, and they placed upon us very, very difficult, backbreaking work. Why is that so hard for a Levi to say? Because it's not true. Because we know that Shevet Levi was not included in the Shebet of Mitzrayim. For some reason, Parah exempted the Shevet of Levi. They were allowed to sit and learn. They were allowed to be in Goshen and just sit in the Beis Medrash and learn all day. The rest of their brethren had to go and do the Avodah Kasha. But they, Parah, for some reason, Rav Moshe Sternbach points this out, the irony of like Parah, at least with all of his evil, he was able to appreciate the fact that there is an importance of having people sit and learn in Klal Yisrael, and that they don't have to go and be part of the workload or part of the army, as it were. And sometimes we see in our own Eretz Yisrael that we have the opposite, that we're the Jewish state, and yet sometimes, very often, there is a very, very big underappreciation for the Kayach of Torah, and they all have to be drafted. Every yeshiva bachur has to be drafted. Even Parai understood that it's important to have yeshiva bachurim sit and learn. Klal Yisrael needs always Torah to be studied and to be learned in order to have not only an existence for Klal Yisrael, but the entire world, and it brings blessing to the country that it's in. But sometimes we ourselves fail to appreciate ourselves. But how in the world is a Levi bringing his Bikurim supposed to say, Vayitnu aleinu avayda kasha? How could you say that in good conscience? You were not part of the Shibud. You were sitting in a Beis Medrash. You did not have to do backbreaking work. You did not have to make bricks and build Pisim and Ramses and do all types of menial labors that the rest of Klal Yisrael had to do. How can a Levi come and make this declaration of Vayitnu aleinu avayda kasha? How is that possible? And the answer that you have to say, and this is what the Lekach Das does say, is that we see the importance of the inyan of being Naisei Ba'al Im Chaveri. That we know in Musar, one of the fundamental, foundational points of every Musar, of whenever we're engaged in any Musar about Bein Adam L'Chaveri, the Aleph Beis of Bein Adam L'Chaveri is being Naisei Ba'al Im Chaveri, which means that I have to, simply put it, I have to have sympathy for you. I have to be along with you with your burden. But it doesn't just mean that I should go, oh, I feel so bad for you. But you have to literally feel the other person's pain. Naisei ba'olam chaver means that I'm literally taking your burden and I'm sharing your burden with you. I'm not just saying, oh, yeah, I feel really bad. It must be very hard, but l'chaim l'shalom. I'm seeing a yid. A yid is in sar. And instead of just saying, okay, I'm sorry, I wish you well, mitzvah Hashem, everything will be good, you have to go and you have to be nice, you have to feel that person's pain and try as best you can to not just sympathize, but to empathize, to be a part and parcel in their schlepping, in their burden, in their pain, in their torment, and to feel it and to be one with them. That's what's expected of it. It's a very high level to reach. It's not normal to be able to, if I'm doing well, if I have a job and I see somebody else doesn't have a job, I feel bad for them, no doubt. But for me to literally feel like I don't have a job, if I have a friend that doesn't have a child for many years and I have a child, I should feel like as if I don't have a child. I should feel as if I don't, my daughter did not get a shidduch, I didn't get a shidduch, I didn't pass the test, I didn't get into the graduate school. It's hard. But that's what's expected of a person. A person has to feel the pain of another yid. I once saw a beautiful chap from the Kutzker. The Kutzker would say, every midah has something that you could take and you could transform it into a good. Every bad midah has some good. Every good midah has some bad. But the trick to life is taking every midah in the world and somehow converting it l'tayv. So he says, where is the midah of an apikores, somebody that doesn't believe in God, how can you ever convert that into a good? How can you ever take an apikores and say, I want to be an apikores? That's something that, it's hard to do. Says the Kutzke, I'll tell you exactly when you could be an apikores. A lot of times, when somebody else is suffering, somebody, chas v'shalom, they break their leg, let's say. So you say, ah, terrible, Hashem should give you a refuah shleima. A person is failing his tests. You say, Hashem should give you a Yeshua. Hashem should give you a Yeshua. He says, no. He says, that's not a time to throw it on God. Don't believe in God at that point. You have to go yourself and try to help that person out as much as you can. You see he's not doing well in Shir, he's not getting the Gemara. Don't say, God will help. No, you go and say, let's learn together. I'm gonna help you. I'm not believing in God right now. God is something that we easily throw the burden on Him. But sometimes we have to take the burden ourselves, and we have to say, I'm not leaving this to God. I'm gonna do it myself. That's when it's good to be quote unquote an apikores. And that's what the Lekach Da'as says is the takeaway from this Yisrael, this halacha, that a lev, it seems like such a non-Musar vart, that a person, a Levi, says the Parsha Bikurim, you take Musar from this, because you see that if a Levi is able to say that Vayitnu Aleinu Avayda Kasha, that Parai put great Avayda on me, what does that mean to say? That means to say that the Levim in Mitzrayim felt the burden of their brethren who were engaged in backbreaking labor, impossible circumstances, but they felt their pain. They didn't just say, okay, we're in the base medrash, Baruch Hashem, we got a patur, so we don't have to, look out the window and see what's going on, in the fields of Mitzrayim, because we're good. Ani v'afsiyat, I'm doing fine. Baruch Hashem, my situation is good. I'm learning my Gemara. I'm getting a great shir every day, and chavrusas are good and whatever. I don't have to worry about what's going on in the fields of Egypt. A Levi was able to honestly say, because we felt their pain. In fact, he doesn't say this, but it's pasha that Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate example of a Levi who literally was Naisei Ba'alam Chavera. The whole epicenter of being Naisei Ba'alam Chavera really comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the pasuk says, one of the first introductions that we have to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu grew up, Vayetze el achiv, vayar besiv leisam. He went out to he was sitting, remember, where was Moshe Rabbeinu at this point? He was in the palace of Paroi. He was not at all subjected to any backbreaking labor. He was fine. There was air conditioning, and there was food, and there was wine, and there was money. He lived a privileged life. But yet, he went out when he grew up. Vayigdal, you know what made Moshe great? The godless of Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayigdal Moshe. He didn't stay in that air-conditioned palace too long. As soon as he realized he's a Yid and that his brethren are out working and suffering, he saw their pain. Rashi says famously, Nasan Einai V'libai Lies Meitzer Aleihem. He made sure that his eyes and his heart were focused on them, and he grieved with them. He commiserated with them. He didn't just sympathize with them, he empathized with them. He became a part of them. And he realized that I can't be happy if my fellow Yid is not happy. We're together in this. We have achdus, and achdus means quite literally that you have to feel the pain of somebody else. There's a taisus in Menachos, a very fascinating taisus where we all know the famous wisdom of Shlomo HaMelech, the most famous, Solomonic decision, Solomonic wisdom, as the Goyim, call it, was the case. It's brought down in Nach about how there were two mothers, and they were fighting over, their one baby. They both had babies. One of them lived. One of them died. And both of the mothers were finding that the baby that lived was their baby, and the other one was the dead baby was the other woman's. They're both pointing fingers. They came to Shlomo HaMelech. How is Shlomo HaMelech going to figure it? They didn't have DNA tests back then. How are you going to figure out who's the mother of the living baby? So he says, I have a great idea. I'm going to take the baby that's alive, and I'm going to cut the baby in half, and I'm going to give both of you, Yachleiku, Sumchus, Maman Amutu B'Safik Chalkim, we're going to give you both half. So one mother says, you know, fine, that sounds like a good pshara. And the other mother says, no, Chas V'Shalom, give the baby to her. Let her have it. So Shlomo HaMelech, of course, with his wisdom, said, okay, the mother that has the baby, that wants the baby to survive, obviously she has maternal feelings for her baby, and she's the mother. She's the real mother, and he awarded her with the mother. You know, the mother-in-law joke about that, you know, there's another case with two mothers-in-law, and they're both saying, that's my son-in-law, the one that wanted to cut the baby in half, to cut the son-in-law in half, that was the real mother-in-law. But anyway, there was really another case of Shlomo HaMelech that's brought down in the Taisos of Menachos, that Shlomo HaMelech, there was a baby that was, I think they call it a co-joined twins, is that what it's called? Co-joined twins, which means that they basically, it's one baby with two heads. And they have this. If you you could Google it. It's not easy to look at, but there are people in this world that Nebuch have two heads. And there was a question about Yerusha, about how much they're entitled to, because there were other children, and when the parent died, you know, are they entitled to two parts, or are they just entitled to one? Do they have a din of two separate children, or are they considered one body? So what Shlomo HaMelech is going to do? So what he did was as follows: he put a towel over one of their heads, and then he poured boiling hot water on the other head, and the other head started crying out because of the pain of the other head. So he said they have a din of one person. And the Balei Musar say that what you take from this is that when I can feel your pain, then we're one person. If a Yid feels another Yid's pain, then Klal Yisrael is really one. And you see that we do. Lamaisa, we do. If you're into what's going on in the world, and you see the Chayalim, you know, Nebuch, you know, dying on Kiddush Hashem every single day, if you grieve over that, if you feel like a pinch of like sadness, that means that we're one people. If you couldn't care less and you just go on to sports, that's a problem. That means that we're not such, we don't have such achdus. But Naisei Ba'alam Chaver is a real thing. It's not just that I'm giving lip service to you and I feel bad, but I'm actually feeling your pain to the degree that I can say that that Avodah Kasha was not just on you, it was on me, says Shevet Levi. We were feeling it with you. We genuinely felt your pain. I saw recently an article that was written like an obituary about Reb Avram Ozband, who is the son of the Lekach Das. Lekach Das was Reb Isaac Ozband, who was Rosh Yeshiva in Telz. He had a brilliant son. It's unbelievable if you read these articles about him. When he was a little boy, his mother didn't want to send him to yeshiva because she saw that he was gifted, and she taught him at home all Chaf Dalet Sifrei Tanakh personally. So by the time he got to yeshiva, he was a bucky in time. But when he was 6 years old, he went to yeshiva in Cleveland, I think, and he was 9 years old. He was already in high school. They already put him in a high school shir. They interviewed a guy. He said, "I was 16 years old. I was like, I thought I was a big knocker." And the Rebbe gave me a chavrusa. He's 9 years old. Imagine if you come to yeshiva and you're given like a 9 year old kid to learn with. Like, that's not too good for your ego, right? But this little 9 year old was much better than all of them. And he was giving chaburis already, you know, before his bar mitzvah. It's an amazing story. You know, you read about this, you think it happened, you know, 200 years ago. Anyway, everybody knew that he was slated for greatness. And he became very close to the Gedolei Yisrael and all the Rabbeim, and everyone in Telz knew that he was Rav Gifter, and all the Rabbeim like loved him. And then when he became at a certain stage of his life, also very young, maybe late 20s, early 30s, he started a yeshiva, which eventually, I think it was in New Jersey originally, eventually became the famous Riverdale Yeshiva. It's called the Yeshiva of the Telz Alumni in Riverdale. One of the premier yeshivas in America. There's Lander, and then there's Yeshiva Telz Alumni. It's up there. You know, it was up there. And it's a very hard yeshiva to get into, and to get into there, if you just make it into Telz, that means you're already you're a genius, and then v'chule v'chule. It was nonstop learning, and people learn their day and night. The hasmada is incredible, and the shirim are. It's a very chash, and he was the Rosh Yeshiva. He founded it, he fundraised for it, he built it, he toiled over it, and he was very matzliach in his life. He was a great orator. If you ever heard any of his shmuz, and I used to call the Riverdale office just to have them send me his speeches. He gave a very famous speech every year by the Telz, by his dinner, the Telz Riverdale dinner. He would give a State of the Union address, Kilo, and I love those speeches. They sent me in the old days the cassettes and the CDs, and suddenly he was nifter just last week. He was in the Beis Medrash or in the yeshiva, and he died very, very suddenly. I think they say now that he was sick and he didn't tell anybody, but he died very suddenly in his late 70s, and it was a very, very, and it is a major blow for Klal Yisrael. He was a gadol b'Yisrael and a future, at 70, whatever, is not so old today. People live in their 90s and beyond, so we could have had him for another 20 years leading Klal Yisrael, leading his Talmidim, and but Chaval Da'avdin. But one of the stories that stood out to me is that he once was Menachem Avil. He was Menachem Avil, I'm sure, a lot, but he had two Talmidim who, they were brothers, and they had a sister who was she wasn't well, she was physically incapacitated. She was not mentally well, and she was not physically well. And Nebuch, she was Nifteris. They lived in Baltimore. And he drove down to Menachem Avil by this family and by these Talmidim. So he told his Talmidim over the following story. He said that when he went one year to Eretz Yisrael, he visited Rav Shach. He was very close to Rav Shach. And Rav Shach spoke to him for a while, and then he came back to Yerushalayim, Rav Azban, and his daughter said, "Where'd you come from?" He said, "I went to visit Rav Shach," and they were very upset that he didn't bring them along. They also wanted to meet Rav Shach and to get a bracha from Rav Shach. So he called somebody and they arranged another meeting with Rav Shach, and they drove back together, him and the two girls. And Rav Shach told them as follows. Rav Shach said that at the time Rav Shach was 104 years old. We don't know exactly how old Rav Shach was because we didn't have, he didn't have his birth certificate. Got lost in all the wars that he went through. But they surmise that he was, in his early hundreds when he was Nifter. And the article says he was 104 at the time. And he couldn't learn anymore. He couldn't eat anymore. He couldn't really talk so easily anymore. So he said, what's my point at this point in life? What am I here for? And Rav Shach said that he answered his own question. He says, "Me'eza tam sheyia," that for whatever reason, my existence brings a nachas ruach to the Rabbeinu Shalom. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why Hashem chose to keep me here to be 104 years old. I'm not accomplishing very much at this stage of my life, but me'eza tam sheyia, whatever the reason is, Hashem gets some particular hana from me. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Now, they always say, for B'Shem Rav Nachman Breslov, I don't know if it's true or not, but that, he would say that on a person's birthday, it's a big day of celebration because it was the day that Hashem decided that the world needed me to be part of it. And that's the hergish that we should all have. If we're alive, that means we're relevant in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's scheme of things. We're necessary, otherwise Hashem would take us away. He doesn't have to have extra people in the world. if we're here, then that must mean that we're giving him some nachas ruach, or we're supposed to be giving him some nachas ruach. And Rav Ozban told this over to his Talmidim, that we're sitting Shiva, that we don't know why your sister, you know, was so incapacitated, and what she, but me'ezah tam shia, she was giving the Eibishter Hana, her very presence in this world, gave HaKadosh Baruch Hu nachas ruach. And then, after that, he went over to the mother and sister of the Nifteris, and they were crying bitterly. And he sat with them, he let them grieve, and he gently encouraged them. He says, cry. It's good to cry. And then he paused and he said quietly, I know, because I also lost a daughter. Years earlier, he had a daughter by the name of Leah, and she was a young girl, and she was hit by a car, and she died. And it was a very big tragedy for them, and they obviously, you know, grieved tremendously. But he was crying, the Rashiva was crying along with the mother and with the daughters, and he was literally Naisei Ba'ilam Chaver, is literally living his father's vard over here. That to be Naisei Ba'ilam Chaver doesn't mean like, okay, I feel very bad for you, Hashem should help you, and Hamaki Menachem Eschem. Being Naisei Ba'ilam Chaver means that I have to feel your pain, I have to cry with you, I have to like literally put myself in your shoes, understand to the degree that I can what you're going through, and say to you that I am here with you. You're not alone. We are feeling the pain together. We're one. And that is, that's a tremendous, and then he said to them, by the way, he said that you should know that one day soon, Bekar of Mashiach will come, and your daughter will greet you. But this time, she will no longer be shackled in a wheelchair. She will run up to you and jump into your arms, and she will be more beautiful than you could have ever imagined. This was the nichum that he gave her, that he gave them. And such a beautiful story, and so telling about the degree of mussar that he didn't just espouse. Like sometimes it's easy to give a shmooze, but to actually live it, you see that he actually lived exactly what his father was saying is the importance of being Naisei Ba'ilam Chaver. I want to just end in the remaining minutes that we have with the flip side of this. The flip side of this is, and this is a much harder level to reach, as if what I told, what we're talking until now is easy, which it's not, it's very hard, but there's a flip side, and that is that until now we've been talking about when your friend is suffering, how you have to commiserate, have to feel his pain. There's another thing that seems much easier, but if you're honest with yourself, you'll realize and you'll admit that it's much harder. And that's when your friend is not suffering, but he's celebrating. When your friend has a simcha, when your friend gets engaged and you're looking for a shidduch, when your friend gets a job and you haven't found one, when your friend gets into a graduate school and you're chalashing to get in, but you haven't gotten your acceptance letter yet, and you look at him, And you want to be happy for him. Can you actually join in his simcha and genuinely feel his, not his pain, but his joy? Rav Huttner used to say, "Ima anechi b'tzara," that it's one thing to be with you in sorrow, but there's a higher level, and that's "Ima anechi b'simcha." I'm with you in your joy. It's a very, very, that's a taller order. It's much harder to be together with somebody in joy than to be with somebody in pain. And the reason for that is that it's quite natural that if I'm in a good place and you're not, I could like feel bad for you and I could even join you in your pain because at the end of the day, I'm in a good place. But let's say I'm in the bad place and you're in a good place, I should be happy for you. I'm not there. I don't feel that level of happiness because I'm missing this myself. I want it myself so badly. I want my daughter to get engaged, so I should go to your daughter's vart and genuinely dance with you and celebrate with you when I need it. Can I put myself in your shoes? I can't. It's very hard. It's a very big chiyuv, but that is what's expected of us as well. I'll tell you a vart that I saw recently. b'shem Rav Kalman Epstein, the Rashiva of Shara Taira. We have a Shara Taira Talmud here, so he could go back and tell his Rashiva that I'm quoting him. Two Shara Taira Talmidim. Maybe more, anyone else? He said as follows, that the Pasuk says, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. Klal Yisrael by Har Sinai camped Vayichan in the singular. It should have said Vayachanu, but it says Vayichan, they camped as one. And Chazal famously say, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. When we were standing by the foot of Har Sinai, we were one nation. We were united. We were like one person. So Reb Kalman asked that, I don't understand. There were other things that happened before Matan Torah. Were we not one when we were in Egypt? Were we not one when we left Egypt? Were we not one when we were almost drowned in the Yam Suf? But there the Pasuk doesn't say it in the singular. Only here by Matan Torah, Bishas V'chasna of Klal Yisrael, which was what Matan Torah was, suddenly it says it in the singular. Why not before this? And he says this vart that we're saying, that it's not really such a big kunz. It's not such it's huge, but it's not as big a deal to feel one with somebody else when we're all in the same boat. We're all suffering. We're all about to drown. We're all in Egypt. We're suffering. We're slaves, and we have terrible lives, terrible. To be one with other people when things are bad, it's hard, but it's easy because it's natural. But to be one with somebody at a chasna, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, I should be happy for you, and you should be happy for me, at a simcha, that's a much bigger kunz, that's a much bigger trick to pull off. There the Torah is madgish, there the Torah stresses, Vayichan Sham Yisrael neged ahar, ki ish echad lev echad. Even there, b'shas simcha, we're able to fully appreciate, not just my own personal celebration, but I'm celebrating for you as well. I'm happy for you as well. And that's a very high, high level to reach. You know, there's a Gemara in Ksuvas on Daf Ches, which speaks about Sheva Brachas. The sugya of Sheva Brachas in Ksuvas Daf Ches. And one of the Brachas of Sheva Brachas is, the first Brach of Sheva Brachas is, Shakol Bara L'Chvaydei. That everything was created for the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the glory of Hashem. What does that mean? Why are we making this bracha here? So if you look in Rashi, Rashi says that the bracha is addressing La'asifa sa'am ha'ne'asafim sham ligmal chesed. We're celebrating, we're giving a bracha, not so much to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the people that have gathered to celebrate at the Sheva Brachas. They're doing chesed with the chasen and kala, they're being misameach, the chasen and the kala. And why is this shakol bar l'chvaydei? Why is this the glory of Hashem? Because what we're doing by celebrating, by giving simcha to the chasen and kala, we're emulating Hashem. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu set this in motion already from the beginning of time. When he married, he was the shushpin, he was the escort, bringing Adam to Chava. He was the Masada Kedushin. He made Sheva Brachas. He braided Chava's hair. He basically was doing everything at the Chasna to make them happy. So when we come together at a Chasna and we make the Chasan and Kala happy, it's Shakol Bar L'Chvaydei. We are doing this to glorify Hashem because we are following suit. Just like he does it, we do it. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing, we're trying to emulate. He was Mesameach Chasan Kala. In his glory, in his honor, we are also coming and gathering to celebrate and to be Mesameach L'Chasan and Kala. My kasha on this Rashi was and is that L'Chaira, this isn't the only time that we do mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has set the template for. Every time a person is Menachem Avel, every time a person is Mevaker Chayla, every time a person is Kaiver Mesim, is Kvuras Ames, all of these mitzvahs are mitzvahs, the Gemara in Saita says, is Valachta Bedrachov. Just like he does something, we have to follow his path. He showed us how to, he buried Moshe Rabbeinu, we have to bury the mace. He visited Avraham Avinu, B'yayim Shlishim L'Milasai, we have to be Mevaker Achayla. But yet we don't say every time we go to a hospital to visit a sick person, or every time we go to a funeral, I've never been to a funeral and heard the bracha of Shakol Bar L'Chvaydei, even though everybody's coming to honor and to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's lead. So why are we not making that bracha there? And I feel that the same yisayid applies, that it's one thing to go and be Menachem Avol. It's one thing to go and be Mevaker Chayla, but I'm healthy. Baruch Hashem, I could walk, I could talk, I could move, I could function, I could eat, I could sleep. I'm going to visit somebody in a hospital. It's a wonderful mitzvah, don't get me wrong, but it's something that's human. It's something that Gayim also visit people in the hospital. Gayim also bury their dead. It's something that's very human, and it's easy almost to feel bad for somebody, and I can help you. If I feel bad for you, that will galvanize me to like be a tzaddik and to go and help you. Much, much harder is it to go and give kavod to the Rabbeinu Shleilam to be mesameach somebody when they're happy. That's already a tall order. That's divine. If you're doing that, that means that you are literally following. There's no human nature at play over here. Here it's purely a godly endeavor. You are acting in a divine way because you are clearly doing something that's going against your grain by being mesamech, somebody that you perhaps also need a Yeshua. You also want that simcha, and you haven't tasted it yet yourself, maybe, and still you're going to Shevar Bracha, still you're going to a chasna, still you're dancing with them with all your might. That shows, Shakol Bar Lechvay, that you're acting purely for the sake of the Rabbeinu Shlom. That's a Vayichan Shlom Yisrael type of mitzvah, that you yourself can show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm doing this for you. This is for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not for me. I don't get any sipuk out of this per se, other than trying to act and emulate your lead. And this is something that it's very hard for us to do. It's a really, really difficult expectation that is placed on us, much more than being misabel with somebody, much more than commiserating with somebody, is the ability that we have when somebody else has a simcha. You know, sometimes you see a chassan getting an ali in the morning and they say, you know, and people come over to him and give him a hug. That's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing because a lot of the guys that are going giving a hug are not themselves chassanim, even if they're in the parish of Shidduchim. But it seems very genuine that they're literally very happy for the other person. They're happy for them and they're singing for them. That's an amazing midah. That's a midah that is not... It should not be underestimated. I'll end with one beautiful story that I just saw recently. The great Reshiva of the Mir, of Nassim Tzvi Finkel, we know suffered from Parkinson's disease. He was very, very sick, very incapacitated, in a wheelchair, hardly able to speak and not able to move. And he was, you know, but yet he was able to fly all over the world, go to, you know, to fundraise millions of dollars, build the yeshiva, Mir Yeshiva, from a much smaller yeshiva into a yeshiva that houses, you know, thousands of Kail Yungalite and Bachrim and Superpower in the Eilam HaTaira, arguably the largest yeshiva, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, but possibly in the world, and on a very high level, and he gave shiurim and chaburis, and amazing, amazing individual, amazing, you know, words don't suffice to describe the greatness of Reb Nassim Tzvi Finkel. And he dedicated his life to building up Taira and building up the Mir in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim. One day he was at a chasna in Beit Vegan. And anyone that's been, I learned in Beit Vegan when I was in Eretz Yisrael in Kol Taira. Whoever is, maybe you went to Shraga or one of these yeshivas in Beit Vegan, and anyone that's in has ever been Beit Vegan, they know that if you go to the edge of, I was in the other side of Beit Vegan, but in the side of Beit Vegan that has that Shraga is in, that Grus is in, that Michala, that part of town is there's a spectacular view of Yerushalayim that you can't see anywhere else. If you want to see beauty, if you want to see the yaifi of Yerushalayim, you go to that part of Beit Vegan, and there's like an open, expansive area that you could just look, and you'll be mesmerized at night what Yerushalayim looks like, and by day as well. This chasna that Rav Nassim Tzvi was at was in Beit Vegan, in a hotel in Beit Vegan, and he asked if he could be taken to the rooftop. Now, there wasn't an elevator, it seems. He had to literally either somehow climb the steps or they carried his wheelchair up the steps. I don't know how they got... They got him to the rooftop of this hotel, which with a spectacular view. And why did the Reshiva want to go to see the top of this hotel in Beit Vegan? He said, show me where Chevron is. I want to see where Chevron is. Hebron is also one of the great yeshivas of used to be in Hebron. Then it moved after the 1929 massacre of Hebron. It moved to Yerushalayim, and they built a malucha in Yerushalayim, and they were expanding the yeshiva. At one point, the yeshiva grew. It's a very, very big yeshiva. If you look in the base medrash of Hebron, it's massive. It's like the biggest base medrash you've ever seen, and they expanded. They were in the process of expanding, and Reb Nosson Tzvi went up there. He wanted to see the expansion. Not of his own yeshiva. He could have said, where's the mirror? I want to see an aerial view of the mirror. Like, oh, that building. He wanted to see a, quote unquote, a competitor's yeshiva. There's no such thing, obviously, but, you know, ki'ilu, a competitor. And he had such joy that it was worth it for him to schlep up to the roof just to see the expansion process of the yeshiva. And he was so happy that that he was able to see that Baruch Hashem, Chevron Geula, how it's expanding and it's being niskadal and it's being and it's breaking out from its shell and it's going bigger and bigger. It wasn't his own yeshiva, but that's the expectation that we should have of ourselves, to be happy not just about our own personal successes. Baruch Hashem, I'm doing well. I'm learning. I'm this. I have a house. I have a car. I have a wife. I have a children. I have a family. I have a business. That's very nice. That's great for you. But now you have to expand yourself, and if people are in pain, you have to be nice to Be'olam Chavir to the degree that you'd be able to yourself say that I served in Mitzrayim. I could say that as a Levi, even though I wasn't physically part of the Shibud, but I was with you with the Shibud. And then you could go to the next level and be Ima Anechi B'Simcha, that you're able to see your competitor or your roommate or your friend or your chavrusa or your and they're doing well, and I'm so happy for you as well. I'm dancing for you, I'm celebrating for you, I'm cheering for you, I'm rooting for you. That's an amazing ability that a yid has, to break out of his own personal Dalet Amos and colonize and expand and make sure that I'm caring for other people as I care for myself, and perhaps even more. Mitz Hashem, these are very, I'm not saying this is an easy shmooze, certainly not to give and definitely not to actualize, but it's good sometimes to know at least where to set the bar, where to set our goals, where to set our ambitions, and hopefully, Mitz Hashem, as we grow day by day, v'yigdal Moshe, v'yetzel ocha, v'yarbe sivloisem, we'll be able to develop a heart that's caring, both in tzar and in simcha, not just for ourselves and our immediate family, but for every single yid as well. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody.